Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Don't miss out on amazing end-of-sale savings on bedding, curtains and more. Available now in-store or at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello there, a very good afternoon and welcome to Liveline. It's John Cook with you until 3 o'clock. I hope you're well today. You can get in touch with the programme, 51551 for your texts, liveline at rte.ie for your emails, and 087-484-8888 on WhatsApp. Fiona, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, John. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks very much for getting in touch with us as well. What happened?
So basically, I had booked my van in for its regular yearly service, CVRT, and I drove it up, had to drive it to Ballyhadrine from where I live in Ballinagar in Roscommon. Mm-hmm. And I said, right, well, I'll get the bus back. And then when it's ready, I'll get the bus back to collect it. So I booked my ticket online yesterday morning from Ballinagar to Ballyhadrine. And that was, from Ballyhadrine back to Ballinagar, my mistake.
Right.
And then when I got on the bus, the bus driver said, oh, I'm not going through Ballinagar. I'm turning off at French Park. And I was like, oh, right, okay. How far towards Ballinagar are you going? He's like, oh, no, just to French Park. We're turning off there at French Park and it's being diverted. So we're not going through Ballinagar at all. So I was like, oh, okay. So I'll have to get off at French Park and walk, which is a 50-minute walk on a busy like N Road and the N5, now with closed off at French Park, but there's no footpath, no hard shoulder.
I know where you mean, and listeners will know it if they drive from Dublin to Castlebar or Ballinagar or Westport.
Yeah.
They'll know going through Ballinagar and French Park and bypassing Ballyhadrine nowadays as well. Why wasn't there a bus home for you to Ballinagar?
Because so the road has been closed for roadworks, and so the bus is diverting at Tulsk and then coming back out in French Park. But I guess the main problem is that Ballinagar has no amenities. We don't have a shop. We don't have, there's nothing in Ballinagar. So this bus service is kind of an essential link for people to get from, either to French Park just to pick up a few messages, or Ballyhadrine to maybe a larger shop, or maybe down even into Longford. So like if you don't drive and you live in Ballinagar, you've basically been cut off from everything. Like I had to explain to four people yesterday, they were most of them were Ukrainians, and through a translation app that there's no bus coming.
So there were other people in your situation then left stranded without a bus?
Yeah. Like there was nothing, there was no signs up at the bus stop. I think there was a notification on Bus Éireann's website, but it was from a month ago. And it wasn't quite clear, just the way it was all done, it wasn't clear what was happening. Mm-hmm. And I suppose my second point is, it's not even that people weren't informed. It's that whoever decision it was to close the road, it wasn't a very civic-minded one in respect of people who live in Ballinagar who have no amenities, who need the bus to get to, to the shops. Because, like I said, the closest shop is in French Park, and that's a 50-minute walk on a main N road with no hard shoulder and no footpath. Like, I was just lucky. I felt comfortable enough yesterday to literally stick my thumb out and hit your eyes from someone, because I thought maybe someone might recognise me from going up to French Park.
You hitched a lift, Fiona.
I did. And a lovely man called Dara gave me a lift home.
A good man, Dara. But is it long since you've thumbed a lift? It's a long time since I thumbed a lift along those roads.
Never in my life have I ever thumbed a lift. Never. I wouldn't. As a woman, I just wouldn't feel safe. But I just felt like I had no choice, because I was sick for the last 2 weeks and just kind of getting over flu, colds, and yourself, the usual winter illnesses, even though it's still autumn. But and I was like, yesterday it was absolutely bucketing down with rain. I was like, I can't do this walk. I'm just not physically able.
You couldn't walk 50 minutes. And there are a lot of good people out there. Thankfully, someone came to your rescue.
Yes, very, very grateful to Dara.
But you wouldn't feel safe normally, Fiona, hitching a lift or thumbing, would you?
Oh, God, no, not at all, no. But I guess it just goes, in the wider context of things with this bus cancellation,
And I'll come back to that. Sorry, by the way, I don't want to talk anyone out of thumbing a lift or anyone giving someone a lift.
No.
I'd love to know our listeners' views. 51551 or 0874888888 on WhatsApp. Do you thumb a lift? Would you hitch a lift? Do you feel it's safe nowadays? Yeah. And do people stop for people hitching a lift as well? Luckily, someone did for you, Fiona.
Thankfully, I know I wouldn't. Like maybe a woman on her own, or maybe a woman with kids or something like that. But definitely not just maybe like men on their own. I know that sounds terrible, but you don't feel like comfortable. Mm-hmm. But I just felt comfortable because I know the area, I know the people, you know. So it didn't feel like a big deal, and it was only a short drive. It's a short drive, but a long walk, if you know what I mean.
You said something else that struck me as well, Fiona. You said there's nothing in Ballinagar, and I'm sure there's good people. I know there's good people in Ballinagar, in fact, but businesses have closed down. It's a village that has dwindled over the years like many. What difference does it make when there's no public transport connectivity all of a sudden?
For me, I'm very lucky. Like, I do drive and I have a car. I was just cut off yesterday because I had to bring it in for a service. But for people who, like the people I was explaining to who couldn't get the bus yesterday were like, no, I have an appointment. I booked my ticket. You know, they were very stressed and frustrated. And, you know, with the drive to get people out of their cars and into public transport, like how can people be expected to do that when like it's being cut off or it's unreliable? Like I said to your researcher, it's 10 days that we're going to be without a bus service. Like, bread and milk don't last 10 days, do you know? Like, even if you could prepare for it, you know, I don't think it's feasible to expect people to be without a public transport service for 10 days.
Now, since you got in touch with us, we've been in touch with Bus Éireann to find out, and they tell us that their Ballina to Dublin expressway route was notified ahead of the time by the local authority, which in this case is Roscommon County Council, of major roadworks taking place in Ballinagar from November 3rd to the 12th. And they say that unfortunately, they've told us in a statement, due to the scale of the roadworks, Route 22 services, that's Dublin to Ballina, will not be in a position to serve Ballinagar or Tulsk, which is nearby as well, until works are completed by the local authority. Customers will find their closest alternate stops at French Park and Strokestown, both a long way from you, I think, Fiona.
Absolutely.
Any customers who've pre-booked tickets from Ballinagar with Expressway are now receiving an email explaining the situation. Bus Éireann is apologising for any inconvenience caused. Yeah. And we have asked Roscommon County Council for comment as well on this. We haven't heard back from them yet, but I'll bring that to you if it happens. Presumably the roadworks are needed, but so too is the bus, Fiona.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the way it could have been done in a much more civic-minded way. You know, like, I've seen lots of resurfacing works being done. You know, they do one half of the road first and then, you know, leave a section open and, you know, you have your stop-go system, you know, with the traffic lights and that. And it could have been done that way, I feel. And like, I could be wrong, but, you know,
you don't want to close off a village, because we know, as you say, in rural Ireland, villages are under pressure enough as it is to keep business and to keep people living there as well. And you decided you were going to notify people yesterday. You've already been out to the bus stop with some handiwork, Fiona.
My makeshift signs. I didn't know how long they'd last. All I had was bits of cardboard. So I just, on a marker, just put a sign up just to alert people, because like there was people standing in the rain, like, and there was another young couple with a young child waiting for the bus. I think they were going to the airport, and I had to tell them there's no bus coming. And then I said, I can give you a lift as far as Tulsk, because actually the bus driver had told me they were stopping in Tulsk. I said, and the guy said, no, I have a car, we'll get the car.
So you met more people waiting at the bus stop, or did you meet more people hitching lifts along the road, Fiona?
Just more people waiting on the bus at the bus stop.
I'd say there'll be more people with the thumbs out for a few days, will there?
I don't know about that, but I suppose if people are now more aware that there's nothing coming, I suppose they can make alternative plans. But it was just the lack of awareness around it, the lack of information, and then the lack of just the fact that the village has been cut off were my two main kind of pet peeves, or not pet peeves, but the things that frustrated me the most. Like, and it doesn't even really affect me. Like I said, like I have a car, well, I have transportation.
It did yesterday.
But it affects a lot of people.
On a wet day where you couldn't face a 50-minute walk, as you said, along a road that I don't think is the best for walking on either. I hate to say it, but sometimes that is the way as well.
I have to do a small portion of it once with two dogs, and it was absolutely terrifying. Mm-hmm. Terrifying. And that was in dry weather in the summer.
Fiona, well done. Thanks for giving people lifts. Thanks for alerting people in your community as well. But they're going to be without the bus there in Ballinagar and Tulsk until the 12th of November, we're told. And it's very interesting to hear your story, because I know there was a time that village had shops, pubs, a post office, like many. Yeah. Are you telling me they're not there anymore?
Nope, nothing. We have one pub, that's it. But the two shops that were there are gone, and the second pub that was there, that's currently being sold. But I understand that the license for it has been sold, so it's not being sold as a pub. Basically, the license is gone from there. So
okay. And I'm sorry to hear it, because we want people living in those villages, but not to have to use their cars to go everywhere. So if there's no public transport, it really makes things even more challenging. I'd be interested to hear from other villages, other communities around the country, if that's your situation as well, because we're told to use public transport. We want more people living in rural Ireland, renovating old houses, putting life back into communities. You need the services too, including the buses as well. 51551 or liveline at rte.ie. And as well as that, I'd like to know if people are out hitching lifts these days, and if you'd stop for someone as well. Dara, was it who stopped for you?
Yes, Dara. Yeah, I don't know what his surname is.
Good man, Dara. Good man, Dara.
He drives a white van, so if anyone knows, we shout out to him.
And white
and also, I'm getting another lift to see this evening. So I had to drive my camper van out to pick up my regular runaround van, because it's more environmentally friendly.
Okay.
But the mechanic then said to me he'd give me a lift back from Ballinagar up to Ballyhadreen to collect that.
Right. So watch out for the hitchhikers, Fiona, and the walkers, where there's no bus there at the moment. Thank you very much for that. It's 51551 if you want to get in touch, your liveline at rte.ie. And of course, it's 0818 715 815. Hello, Ingrid.
Oh, hi.
How are you?
Great, thanks. How are you?
I'm very well. I didn't mean to catch you on the hop. Were you hitching a lift on the roadside there? Were you?
No, I'm emailing. I'm still in work emails, but I had to go. Sorry.
Well, thanks for talking to us on Liveline as well. I'm going to ask you a personal question, Ingrid. How old were you when you had your children?
I was 47 when I had my son, who's 4 now, and I was 49 when I had my daughter, who's 2.
Okay, very good. And how are they doing?
They're gorgeous. They're great. Yeah, fabulous. Mm-hmm. Lucky to have them.
I was asking people earlier on about the latest CSO figures revealing a record high of 408 babies born to women in their late 40s and beyond. Yeah. That's your situation, Ingrid. Well, how was it for you?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I suppose I don't have anything else to compare it to, so it was great. I just feel very lucky to have them. It's not a given that you'll have kids when you're a little bit older, generally, and so I feel really lucky to have them.
Did you always want children, Ingrid?
Yes, very much so. So I thought I wasn't going to get to have kids, kind of in my early 40s, and then I met my husband and things changed. So for a long time I thought, oh well, this isn't going to happen, and really wanted them, so it was a sad thing, but also the reality of life, I suppose.
And the figures aren't a surprise, are they? I mean, this is life now, isn't it? Life gets busy. You may not meet that special someone until later on. That's how it happened for you.
Absolutely. Yeah I met my husband when I was 43, and so I would have, had I been lucky enough and had I met him earlier, we would have hopefully had kids earlier, but it just worked out that way. And I think there's a lot more parents I meet now who are in their 40s than I suppose you would have seen a decade ago, really. Not sure why that is, but maybe it's just more possible, I guess, with sort of medical advancements. I did IVF, So I think it's a bit more possible for people now.
Yeah, that's obviously part of it too, I suppose. But as we say, life is busy. Perceptions change too. People might have thought it was, you had your children in your 20s many years ago. Now it might be your 30s or your 40s or your late 40s or older, we're finding out as well, based on these CSO figures, because they say the number of babies born to women aged 45 and over has risen by 80%. 5% over the last decade. It's 51551 if listeners want to get in touch as well. You mentioned IVF, Ingrid, and I'm wondering, if you don't mind me asking, for you and your husband, was it a conversation then that obviously you were happy to found each other, but that you wanted children, you were worried you may not be able to have them, or how was that process?
Well, we didn't really, but we both really wanted to have kids, and we talked about it quite early on. But you know, we were aware as you get older, you're told a lot from, as a woman, kind of from your early 30s, you're kind of marketed to and told that time's running out, hurry up, you know. Mm-hmm. So there was sort of an awareness that in your early 40s or mid 40s that it's probably quite difficult. We thought we really wanted kids, and we sort of just went for it. And as I said, we were really fortunate to very lucky.
Mm-hmm. And I'm delighted to hear that you're lucky. But I'm just thinking, you know, it does put a lot of pressure on women, doesn't it, as they're getting older, if maybe they haven't found the one, or maybe it can't work for them. Did you feel that kind of pressure and worry?
Yeah. No, before I met my husband, I thought, well, this is it. I guess it's not going to happen. And I was okay. You know, I was okay with it. It wasn't something that I wanted to do on my own. Just for me personally, and lots of people have done that. But I thought it was a done deal, and then it wasn't. But yeah, there is lots of pressure. More pressure actually in your 30s, I think, than in your 40s. I was less stressed about having kids at 45 when I did IVF than I was at 35, oddly. There's a lot of pressure on women all the time.
Uh-huh.
Really.
It's 087-484-8888 on WhatsApp if you want to get in touch, or 0818-715-815. So I'm wondering then, Ingrid, your kids are in, are they, they're not
preschool,
in school yet?
Yeah. Nope, not yet.
They're in preschool.
Four and two.
Well, now you're still a very young woman, but well. is it different? Is it difficult? I know you say you have nothing to compare to. How is motherhood then of preschool or preschool age children then when you're hitting 50 and above?
Yeah, it's tiring, but I've like lots of friends who had kids kind of at a more traditional period of time. And it's exhausting no matter where you are when they're very little. I think I feel personally, for me, I feel a lot more settled in myself in my 40s and approaching 50 than I did when I was 20s and 30s. I don't know. I think that's a fairly common experience for people as they get older. Engaging is a great thing. So I think I'm more equipped to deal with the kind of difficulties of raising kids that happen when you first become a parent now than I would have been 10 years ago, to be totally honest. So it's not always possible when you're older, so it's a bit of a roll of the dice. But I certainly think being older, for me anyway, my kids are benefiting from that.
Okay, I'm delighted to hear it. Do you think ahead? Isn't that the conversation lots of mums and dads have together? You know, how old will I be when he's this age, or when he's in college, or when she's getting married, or things like that?
Yeah, you do think about that. But you don't, there's no point in dwelling on it, I think. Life is pretty unpredictable. You know, you don't really know what it holds. And I have thought about it. We have talked about it and we think about it, but I don't dwell on it, really. Mm-hmm. We're just absolutely thrilled to have them. They're amazing.
Life is good. So what do you say, Ingrid, to someone out there who maybe is in your situation, still trying to have children, or maybe thinking that's not going to happen for them? And by the way, they may not want it to happen for them too, but there are many people who feel that pressure, as you say.
Well, this is one of the reasons why I agreed to come on today, because I would have loved to have heard somebody talking about having kids in their late 40s, because there isn't a huge amount of information about it out there. And I think it is possible. It's not possible for everybody, unfortunately, medically, but it is possible for some people. And, you know, just arm yourself with all the information you can. And that's all you can do, really, and do your best.
And be prepared. It's a lot of fun, Ingrid, but it's tiring at any age as well. Will you stay with us if you can? Because there are more mums wanting to talk to us as well, and lots of people getting in touch with Liveline about this and other issues. 51551.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
And 51551 for your text. It's John Cook with you until 3. Maura, how are you?
Hi, John. Hi, I'm good, thank you.
You have a busy household.
Yes, I'm a very busy household. Yes, we've a family of eight here.
Family of eight. Do you want to give me their ages?
Yeah, well, I'll start with the oldest. He's 19, then 17, 15, 13, 11, and a 14-month-old.
Okay, so people will notice a trend and a gap there. So 17, 15, 13, 11, and a 14-month-old. Well, congratulations on the birth of your baby. Do you mind me asking how old you are, Maura?
I'm 51.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was a big surprise. He obviously wasn't planned, but he's been a fantastic addition to the family. And he's just slotted in great. Yeah, the older kids actually are mad about him. They just have great fun with him. And I think, you know, like long ago, the older kids bringing up the younger kids, it's very much the case here. And they're very much hands-on and helping out. And I just find I'm really, really enjoying motherhood. You know, obviously, there was a lot of worry when we realised we were going to have a new addition. But look, it's worked out really well. I had no idea. Obviously, you know, I was actually, I booked a skiing trip. So I had a hospital appointment the day after I came home from the hospital trip. And then I realised I was 12 weeks pregnant.
So your kids and your family, Maura, you're at the stage where you have a 19-year-old, a 17-year-old, a 15-year-old, a 13-year-old and an 11-year-old. I'm impressed you're at the stage where you can go on a skiing trip. You're having fun, but you weren't expecting to have another baby.
No, but look, he has been absolutely brilliant. And we all went away on holidays last July. And my mindset was there's eight of us going, there's seven of us here to mind Oliver. And, you know, so it worked out great. He had a great time. We all actually really enjoyed it, and we all took turns playing with him and looking after him. So it's been fun. It's been good.
You never know how life is going to go. Isn't that what Ingrid was just saying to us as an older mother there a few moments ago? Well, you didn't expect it to go this way either, but it must have been a big shock for yourself and your husband to realise there was another addition to the family coming.
Yeah, no, we did keep it quiet for a very long time. So obviously it was one of our sons. We had, I think it was his confirmation, and I was about 6 months at that stage. So, you know, when they all came to the party afterwards in the house, then they all realised, you know, what have you some news for?
And what kind of reactions, Maura?
Obviously there was initial shock, but and we'd only told our own kids, our own, you know, children the night before because they're older, they're all going in different directions, between going out and football and so on. So it was very hard to gather them all up and tell them before we told everybody. They were only told like literally 24 hours before everybody else knew. Mm-hmm. So after the initial shock, they were all delighted. I mean, it is a worry. There's lots of things that can go wrong, and you know, it is a worrying time. But thankfully, everything's worked out great, and he is absolutely brilliant. He's up on his feet and flying about the place, and they're enjoying him more now as he's become more active and trying to teach him all the wrong things. But yeah, it's been really good. Like, and I come from an older, a bigger family. I have five older brothers. My husband is one of 10 in his family. So, you know, we are used to bigger families.
But I'm one of 10 myself. I know how this works as well. But it's good. You've got some built-in babysitters there already in the family now.
Yeah, we have the babysitters and we have the taxi driver. We're good to go for a night out.
I'm glad to hear it. I'm more glad to hear you still have the energy for the nights out as well. I don't know if you heard Ingrid saying there, you know, she had nothing to compare this to, becoming an older mother or having a baby in her late 40s, or for you as you're turning 50. Was it different in terms of how you were treated, in terms of the reactions you got? And as you mentioned, the worry and the risk there too.
Yeah, I found it okay, actually. I mean, obviously, we had a lot more checkups. But other than that, everything was exactly the same as I remember. Now, bear in mind, it's been a decade since I was last in a maternity ward. So, but things actually haven't changed that much in a decade. But, you know, I found it okay. And I am a lot more relaxed and I'm enjoying him a lot more. I think the older ones were all 2 years apart. So there was always a few in nappies and it was just constant going, running after them. But, you know, I am a lot more relaxed this time around and I am enjoying it a lot more. And, you know, I don't feel under any pressure. You know, he has been absolutely brilliant. And he, as I said, he's just slotted into our house
you know, and it's been great. So I've had a really positive, you know, and comparing it to the other kids, you know, I really, apart from a few more checkups, but there was that worry, you know, but I don't think it matters what age you are. There's going to be just a kind of a worry, a niggle in the back of your mind, is everything going to be okay?
That's true.
And thankfully, it's worked out just great for us. I mean, we are blessed to have six absolutely perfect, great children. I don't know if they're listening or not, but yeah, hopefully.
I'm delighted for you and to hear that you have six happy and healthy children. Fair play to you as well. Any negative reactions or any people doing a double take if they see you with the baby, Maura?
No, I have to say they've been absolutely brilliant. No, I think after we told our own children, we have my parents are deceased, but Sean's mother, she's Greta. I'll give a good shout out to her. She's 92 and
Hello,
she flies
Greta.
Around in a moped.
Mm-hmm.
And we obviously said, look, we've a bit of news, and of course it's always you think, oh God, there's something wrong. But anyway, she was delighted. And can I actually just say, she had a son, Oliver, as well, that died in August when he was 36 of cancer. And we decided then, because Oliver, our little Oliver, was born in August, we'd name him in memory of him.
So
she's delighted, yeah. So his legacy and his name lives on. So,
I'm delighted to hear it. It's like you're all getting to enjoy something very special in any family over again, Maura.
Yeah,
when you put it like that, who wouldn't want to enjoy it again? Yeah. On the other hand, when you said to me, we're back to the nappies again, I was like, oh, no.
yeah, exactly. Like, we obviously got rid of everything 10 years ago. We didn't need it anymore. So now we're kind of beg, borrow and steal what we can at this stage. But, it is a busy household. Myself, my husband both work full-time, and I've just gone back to work again after maternity leave. But I'm enjoying both aspects. It's busy, but I try to be as organised as I can. But the kids are great with him, and they can mind him, they can put him into the car seat for me and help with things. And, you know, he's entertained all the time. He doesn't have time to cry because he's either being picked up or put on a little tractor and pushed about the place. So, you know, and his oldest son, brother and sister are his godparents. So, you know, it's nice.
Lovely,
we kind of ran out of godparents, as big as our families were. We ran out of godparents. So his brother and sister is his godparents.
You went in-house to source there. Well, that's good. I'm glad that worked out as well. Do you think about, as the years get a little bit older, more as Oliver gets a little bit older, what it'll be like for you going to preschool and the school gates again, as an older mum?
Not really, no. I don't think there's going to be any issues with that. I'm very much live in the moment and enjoy each day as it comes. And I don't, you know, we obviously do have a conversation and we do think about in the future, but, you know, things, life's life, and you just don't know what's around the
That's
corner.
It.
So
and
I
you're
can
happy
just
and you're healthy and you're enjoying it. Good for you. Will you stay with me, Maura, please? 51551
no
if other listeners want to get in touch on this as well. Deirdre, how are you?
Hi, John. I'm good, thank you.
And thanks very much for talking to us as well. Will you tell me about Daisy?
So I suppose I'm not quite as old as the other ladies. Or when I had mine, I was
pointing
43.
Fingers here now.
I mean, no, in saying that, I suppose. I was 40, well, nearly 43. So that was 7 years ago. So Daisy has just turned seven. I suppose unlike Maura's busy household there by the sounds of it, I only have the one. So she was, I suppose, a much longed for child, John. So we had, I suppose, fertility issues like some women and some couples do. I suppose more and more you hear about it these days. But so we had got married, you know, when we were 27. So a long time before we actually ended up having her. So we had about 15 years of, I suppose, fertility treatments one way or another, and I had given up hope, really, I suppose, by the time I was kind of hitting my 40s. Kind of just thought, like, this isn't going to happen, I suppose.
You were trying for a baby for 15 years. I mean, that is very difficult for you, Deirdre, for your husband, for a marriage.
It was difficult. I suppose now that I'm on the other side of it, I kind of look back and go, you know, I find it difficult to remember exactly how you know, bad it was, because, you know, I'm so happy now. But yes, look, it was, there's no two ways about it, it was very, very difficult. And it did go on for, you know, a long, I mean, look, for we're married 22 years. So, you know, the most of our marriage, really, I suppose, was taken up with us trying to have a baby. But yeah, so I guess by the time I got to my early 40s, we had had a conversation. I suppose we got to the point where we were like, okay, maybe we just need to call it and just try and, you know, live our lives and get on with it and see. And so we kind of did that, but we had two embryos remaining frozen from a previous round of IVF. And we just said, look, we'll do those with no real expectation of it working, because nothing had worked previously, John. You know, so we'd done about 7 rounds of different fertility treatments at that stage, and nothing had ever worked. So it was more like, we just need to do this now, and just so we're not looking back and regretting not having done the transfer then in the end of those two embryos. Mm-hmm. But actually, while we were waiting to get ready to do that, somehow, miraculously, I fell pregnant naturally. So there you go. The world
miraculously,
works in
you say,
ways.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So that's where we were then. So I think.
So this wasn't through the IVF. This is while you were thinking, let's do IVF again.
Yeah.
You find you're pregnant. Can you describe that feeling that day, Deirdre?
Oh, I mean, not really, but I'll try. I mean, it was, first of all, complete disbelief, really. I probably did about 3 or 4 pregnancy tests before I could actually even let my brain accept that this was happening, if you know what I mean. It was just like, well, actually, that must be wrong. I'll do another one. Okay, that can't be right. I'll do another one. It just didn't feel real at all. And then by the time I did maybe the 4th one, I was like, okay, actually, this is real. This is happening. Holy moly, this is beyond what we, you know, I really and truly, because we just had turned the switch off, if you know what I mean, and kind of were making plans to get on with our lives and move on. And then this happened. So,
and 15 years of trying for a baby that you wanted so much, you and your husband find you have a little bundle of joy called Daisy. That must have been a very, very special time.
It was incredibly special. And I remember when we went in, because of our history and maybe our age, my age as well, we did have an early scan, you know, at 8 weeks, and went into the hospital and, you know, we were told there was a fine, strong heartbeat. And I just remember that moment in the corridor of the hospital, the two of us just holding onto each other, just bawling, crying, because the reality of it, seeing it or hearing, you know, hearing the heartbeat and seeing the little flicker in the scan was just the most incredible. It was the most incredible feeling. Like, actually, it was life changing, obviously, but it was amazing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Isn't that what it's all about? And Maura is still with us as well on the line. Maura, I don't think it matters what age it happens when you have that amount of happiness and good fortune in your life as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's still really a special moment to hear that heartbeat. And, you know, it's just, it is amazing. And, you know, it is very emotional as well. So I don't think it matters how many children or what age you are. Mm-hmm. It's just a really, really special time. It's just breathtaking, really.
So, yeah. Deirdre, I'm sure now, like we heard from Ingrid as well before, you're probably a tired mum, but a happy mum, it sounds like a lot of people as well. And Daisy's doing well, age 7. So you have just turned 50, is that right?
I just turned 50 yesterday. Yeah.
Oh, happy birthday.
So, thank you. You know, I suppose when you have a milestone birthday, you kind of look at your life maybe a little bit more than you would on the normal birthday, let's say. And I looked at my life yesterday and just thought, wow, like, you know, I had her, I think, exactly when I should have had her, you know. What the ladies were saying earlier on, Maura and Ingrid, that you know, they're more confident in themselves. Maura said she has more time, and kind of, you know, that her son has just slotted in. And like, you just, I think as an older mom, I think you do, you're more self-assured, or, you know, you know yourself a little bit better. And I think maybe that's what the way I feel, really, that, you know, it's you know, if somebody said to me, would you do it all again? And even though it was despair and hopelessness for so long, I probably would, because the life I have now is exactly what I want.
I'm delighted. Now, do you worry, though, about does anyone treat you differently? Are you any different at the mother and baby groups if you're a bit older?
No, I wouldn't say now. I suppose, look, in the beginning, you know, when I was going to the mother and baby groups, you know, I think it was probably my own hang up, really, John, rather than anyone looking at me differently. Like, I think maybe at that stage I thought, there was a big neon sign over my head going, I'm an older mum, pointed down at me. But that's not the reality. I'm sure everyone's caught up in their own life and their own world. They're not, maybe not looking at you half as much as you think they're looking at you. So, but I did. Look, I felt a little bit like, oh, my goodness. My sister, who's nearly 8 years younger than me, had her baby, her first baby, 7 weeks before I had Daisy. So we were pretty much, you know, pregnant at the same time and, you know, had our little babies at the same time. And we went to a lot of the mother baby groups. Mm-hmm. So I suppose I was kind of looking at her, you know, 7, 8 years younger than me going, well, that's the age range. And here I am, you know, on the other side of it. But, you know, as I said, that was probably my own hang up, really, yeah, rather than anyone else.
Ah, look, we all compare now, don't we? But once you're happy and healthy, I think. Can I ask both of you to clear up something for me that I often hear about and people are getting in touch with us about as well? Deirdre, were you referred to as a geriatric mom or a geriatric pregnancy? You know that term?
Yeah, I was. Yeah. And that was a bit, well, insulting, but also, you know, you kind of gives me a bit of a start. I was like, whoa, hang on now a second. But, you know, I guess, look, that is the term. I don't think it's not used probably nearly as much as it may have been used like years ago, but certainly I was, yeah.
And Maura, was that the same for you as well?
Yeah. To be honest, I actually can't even remember. I think I was more self-conscious when I was pregnant with my daughter, Shifra, like, at 40, you know, actually this time around, I seem to be oblivious to it all. I think, in my own little bubble and enjoying everything.
Good. It's a medical term. The geriatric mother or advanced maternal age are often used to describe pregnant women. Would you believe at age 35 or over? So there's a lot of people in that boat, I think, nowadays, and more so, isn't there?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely,
I think it's probably more the norm now, isn't it? I mean, look, the figures, obviously, that you quoted earlier on show that. And I mean, look, life, as you said, like, life is different now. I suppose society has changed a little bit. There's people are meeting later in life. Uh-huh. But also, you know, people might be waiting a little bit more to be a bit more financially stable, or even the housing situation. You know, they might be still living at home, or, you know, living with their in-laws or whatever. And if there's a lot of that going on as well, that, you know, there might be decisions that are being made, you know. And look, as my own situation shows as well, you know, people aren't sitting around going, do you know what, actually, I'm going to wait till I'm 45 to have my first child. Do you know, it's just life.
Okay, but it can happen. It can happen. And it can be a great story, as in your case, Deirdre and Maura and Ingrid. And thank you so much for talking to us as well. And my very best to you and family and to your beautiful children as well, who are blessed to have mothers, whatever age they are as well. Good health to you all and happiness. Thanks very much, Deirdre and Maura and Ingrid. And everyone getting in touch with us about mums becoming parents at an older age. It's 51551 or liveline at rte.ie for your stories as well. Regarding Fiona, you'll remember she was out hitching a lift on the road in County Roscommon yesterday in the rain because the bus didn't stop because of roadworks. Well, Roscommon County Council has been in touch with us to tell us their roadworks are currently ongoing on the N5. These are essential to ongoing maintenance, and the road closure is required in order for the works to be completed efficiently and safely. They say their road closure was advertised in local and national newspapers and relayed to the general public using social media and an app as well, Map Alerter. Traffic diversions are in place and the emergency services are informed. And Roscommon County Council says they're not aware of any difficulties in relation to public transport services, so cannot comment. But just to say again, Bus Éireann said they were not notified of major roadworks taking place in Balnagar in County Roscommon between the 3rd and the 12th of November. The walk and the hitching goes on for some. If you're putting your thumb out on the road, 51551, we'd love to know your story.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
And on WhatsApp, we're 087 484 8888. Linda, how are you?
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm very well.
You're doing a great job filling the big boots.
Oh, thanks very much. Well, thanks for talking to me on Liveline. Tell me what happened on your walk.
Yeah, well, I was just out walking the other evening just after Halloween, and I was enjoying looking at the seasonal, the leaves and the leftover Halloween stuff and just kind of thinking how nice everything was. And then I turned a corner and spotted Christmas decorations and a fully lit Christmas tree in someone's front room. Very, very nice, but I kind of thought, oh, hell no, not already. You know, this is pressure on people too early. You know? Uh-huh.
So kicking the leaves, looking at all those lovely autumn colours, spotting the odd rotten pumpkin if you pass by my house as well, I'd say.
Plenty.
And then round the corner, Christmas.
Christmas.
It comes as a bit of a shock every year, doesn't it, Linda? Does it get earlier?
Well, I don't know about you, but I found it was a bit early this year because really with the pumpkin still there, I thought, no, let's give it a bit of a gap, you know, let's enjoy the now and wait a little while. But then I started to think about it a bit more when I was going about my walk, and I kind of thought, you know, well, who am I to judge? You know, I don't know the circumstances of the people in that house. I don't know what their joy is. I mean, Christmas might be the very most mm-hmm. important thing in their lives, you know, or they might have had a loss, or they might be expecting people home. I don't know. So by the time I'd finished, I kind of thought, you know, oh, so what? Their joy, just not for me.
Or they might be gone a bit mad, Linda. Come on, let's face it. Putting up decorations in November for Christmas. 51551 if listeners have views on this as well. When me and my kids were buying stuff for Halloween the last couple of weeks, they were saying, Dad, why is it that there's so much Christmas stuff in the shops when Halloween isn't over yet? But this isn't the shops you're talking about at all. This is houses decorating for Christmas right now already.
Exactly. Yeah, I get it with the shops. I mean, this is their season. They have to make their money and fair play. But, you know, when we're bringing it into our own heads and, you know, showing it out there so visibly, it's kind of, oh, no, it's pressure on parents, I think, you know, because the kids start, you know, writing their lists and, you know, it's pressure on Santa as well. It's pressure on everybody. And I just kind of think it should be a little bit more space between seasons, you know,
mm-hmm.
just more slow down, you know, enjoy the now and wait a little bit longer before you get into all that. But
okay.
That's just me, and might not be for them.
Well, I'd like to know other people's thoughts on it as well. 51551. But this is a house fully decorated, lights up, Christmas tree up, the whole lot.
Yep. Yeah, well, maybe it's their joy. Maybe they have people coming home from far away that haven't been home for a long time. Maybe somebody's on a bit of a low and needs that light in their lives. And yeah, so who are we to say what's right?
Well, I think you're going to see more of it, because already you're hearing the Christmas ads on the radio as well now that we're in November. I shudder to it'll cause rows in my car as well, but there'll be Christmas music on the radio before long, maybe a little bit earlier too as well. When will you decorate, Linda?
Oh, well, not till the beginning of December. I usually put up the tree the first week in December because I have two birthdays, my husband and my youngest daughter. So I just kind of use that as an excuse to throw up the decorations. And traditionally, I used to watch the Late Late Show and have a glass of something stronger than tea and put up the tree during the whole duration. And that was kind of the kickoff, which I thought was early, but it was just for me, it was okay. But
mm-hmm. I think you're right. A lot of people
Halloween
do it in time for the toy show, don't they?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So, yeah, I suppose, what about you, John? When do you put up your tree?
Oh, I'm a bit of a Scrooge. But like I said, I don't make the decisions in my house. So there'll be three children saying, come off it, will you? Will you, you know, get over it, Grinch? So I'm sure we'll be doing some of it in time for the toy show, and we might add a bit as well. But I am sticking hard and fast to November, I think, for decorations or Christmas songs. I'm told that Mariah Carey doesn't even acknowledge her Christmas before November 1st. Oh, well, she does it from November onwards. Okay. But she'll be ready to get a good airing as well, I'm sure, for Christmas
sure
too. But no, I'll be holding off. I will be trying, resisting harder and harder to hold on until December, Linda. But from what you describe, it's going to be getting even more difficult for some families. They'll be hearing it from the kids when they see others doing it.
The challenge is on, yeah. But for me, no to November is the good key.
Okay, no to November. It's our campaign on Christmas decorations there. It started by Linda. 51551 for your thoughts, listeners, or liveline at rte.ie. Linda, thanks very much for getting in touch with us. 0818715815. I'd wish you a happy you-know-what, but I'm not going to say it yet. So thank you very much. And from Christmas songs, we move to breakup songs. Clodagh, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well, Clodagh. Thanks for talking to us as well today, because we've been talking and hearing this new Lily Allen album that is making headlines as well as entertaining us as well on the radio. West End Girl. She's taken the old breakup songs and heartbreak anthems to another level in this album, because it's very revealing, or she says it's not all gospel, about the breakup of her marriage. Have you heard any of it, or do you like a good breakup album yourself?
Oh, come here. I love a breakup album. I love any reason to hear about how a woman left a man who didn't treat her right. No, the album is absolutely soul-bearing. It is definitely very much a breakthrough album. She hasn't released an album in, I think, something like 7 years. And I think, obviously, there was such allegations when herself and her husband did break up that people are just kind of gobsmacked at what she's revealing, because the album very much feels like diary entries and a very detailed account of what happened about their marriage and how everything went wrong. So yeah, I'm hooked. I'm absolutely hooked on every lyric.
And I mean, Lily Allen, it's not all bleak. I mean, they're catchy pop songs too. She's very entertaining as well. She's vicious and raw on this tell-all breakup album I've been reading. And it's a real-time account of her shock, grief, confusion and anger as her four-year marriage to actor David Harbour fell apart amid accusations of infidelity. In interviews, just to be clear, Allen is stressing the lyrics aren't necessarily the gospel truth. She wasn't sure what was real, what was in my head as she processed the end of this relationship. And I suppose you've got to be careful what you go saying about an ex as well when you put it out there to the world as well. Is it all doom and gloom and misery, or how would you describe the music in the album?
I mean, the thing is, obviously, as you say, when you listen to the lyrics, they're vicious. There's a lot of toxicity in there. There's a lot of confusion, her trying to figure out what did go wrong, what did happen. Is she making it up in her head? But when you listen to it, you're kind of actually bopping along and you're like, this is a pop album, and you're kind of bouncing and listening. But maybe that's the polarity of pop music, is like you're listening, it's fun, it's girly. But then the undertone, the contrast is actually, God, things were really, really bad. But I think like listening to it is a very universal experience for a lot of people. Like it feels like a revenge album, because there's a lot of like realizations in there and things in there that I think a lot of people can relate to when they've been through a difficult breakup or a toxic relationship, you know, which is very universal for human experience.
Would you have to block your ears now or make sure you're not listening to the E version if you've got the kids in the car with some of these songs?
There's a few songs now I'd be listening to, yes, with no kids around. There's a few things they might be asking, what does that mean? So let maybe listen to it in your own time or with headphones in when you're going for a walk.
Were you shocked by that, Clodagh? I suppose just how revealing it becomes.
Really. I mean, it's Lily Allen. She's always been very bold in her statements and how she's been very expressive and definitely doesn't leave any details out. But I think it's also a lot of women are writing these kind of songs in recent years, in the last 10 years, and really just revealing kind of the truth and not hiding anymore behind kind of the mind games or the emotional warfares that they've been put through. And they're really just saying, no, this happened to me and it was real and I went through it.
Tell me about your favourite breakup songs.
Oh, I'm a Taylor Swift girl. last year she brought out The Tortured Poets Department, which was her big breakup album, again, after a very long 6-year relationship, who everybody thought she would marry that guy. But there's a song on it called The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived. That is my anthem. Oh, I can listen to it now and smile, but there was one point I listened to it and it was gut-wrenching and it was a big realisation for me. But no, that one hits really hard.
The title itself is very telling. The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived. We could have a listen to a little bit of it as well, Clodagh.
You treat her like an also-ran. You didn't measure up in any measure of a man. And I don't even want you back, I just if rusting my sparkling summer was the goal.
Taylor Swift and The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived. Is it a bit sad? Is it a bit doom and gloom? Clodagh, does it make you just feel like sometimes how you feel if you're going through a breakup? Is that why people like songs like this?
You know what? It's kind of doom and gloom when you first listen to it. You can hear her heartbreak, you can hear her hurt. But my God, she comes for the man in the chorus and she really comes with power. And I think it's very
empowering, because it's kind of that journey of, like, we all feel the sadness, the pain, but then also taking back your own power, taking back your own worth, and, like, believing in yourself again. And I think the best breakup writers are females. I'm going to put it out there. They really are. And I just love to see that women are empowering themselves and each other to just leave situations that aren't serving them. So I'm all for a breakup anthem, especially when I'm going for a run. Makes me run faster.
Really, does it? A song like that wouldn't make you run faster,
absolutely,
would it?
Oh, well, listen to the chorus.
51551 if listeners want to get in touch, or 087 484 8888 with your breakup songs. What do you think makes a perfect breakup song or a heartbreak anthem, Clodagh? Does it need to make you sad or mad or both?
Possibly a bit of both. I think it's different for different people, because as we know, there's all the different emotions you get after a breakup. But I think it's probably the rawness and the detailed accounts of what happened to people and the vulnerability. That's, I think it's when you listen to it and you can resonate or relate, that's what makes a good breakup album. It's the lyricism in it. It's not necessarily, as you say, the upbeat music that kind of is fluffed around it to package it up and sell it on the radio. But I think it's more about the lyrics hitting home with somebody and somebody really feeling, God, this is exactly what happened to me.
Mm-hmm. And then is it about just matching your mood, sometimes being in that place you want to be, or does it give you a lift? Because they say with Lily Allen, it's clear in this album, it's sort of therapeutic or cathartic for her. She's moving on by the end of it. Taylor Swift has moved on to happiness and marriage and the life of a showgirl and everything else as well.
Absolutely.
Does it kind of just gradually match your mood and move along with you? Or sometimes do you just need to process the sad stuff before you can move on?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's both. I think a lot of people, when they go through a breakup, they listen to sad songs to get the tears out and to feel the feels. But even for me, in my experience, the Tortured Poets Department from Taylor Swift came out about a year and a half after a big breakup for me. And suddenly I was back in all the feelings again, and it brought me back there. And I had all these crazy realizations again when I listened to the lyrics, because I just resonated and the lyrics were so powerful to me in my situation. So I think it can be both. It can be when you need a good cry, but also it can hit you in the feels when you least expect it.
And is there a bit of revenge in these songs as well? Are you like, you go, girl, there if it's is. Taylor Swift or Lily Allen, let them have it. Let them know.
There is definitely a revenge. I'm definitely calling Lily's new album a revenge album. Not unlike Diana and her revenge dress, there's absolutely revenge albums. And it's saying, I'm not letting you get away with it, but also look at me now. I'm doing just fine without you.
Okay. And I'd say there's a breakup song in you, Clodagh, is there? Have you written it yet?
No, but you know what? I'm feeling very close to it at this point.
Oh,
very inspired by Lily and Taylor.
I'm sorry. Are there some good stories to come out though in this album? I'm thinking it sounds like you've been working on a number of tracks.
Oh, I have a few stories about a few men I could definitely put out there, yeah.
Oh, we need to put explicit warnings on this one as well.
Maybe so. Maybe I'll give it to myself and I'll just talk about other people's albums and resonate to them.
Clodagh, I hope you find that happy song as well soon. Thanks so much for talking to us on Liveline. It's 51551 if you want to get in touch, or Liveline at rte.ie.
Get in touch with Liveline on 0818 715 815.
And 51551 for your texts. We have had an absolutely massive reaction to our conversation yesterday, as so many of you reacted to DJ Carey's 5.5 year prison sentence for a €400,000 fraud in which he pretended to have cancer. It was an unforgivable lie that so many of you got in touch with us about, and thank you for doing so as well. And I've just been overwhelmed by some of the posts and messages people have sent me personally, and also have sent us on Liveline through our social media on Instagram and other platforms as well. Just to give you an example of it, I have lost so much through cancer, John. DJ Carey should count himself lucky that he didn't have cancer. I've no sympathy for him whatsoever, and I'm glad the judge didn't give him any special treatment, because he's a GAA star. And many other heartbroken families and parents, including Derek, who spoke to us about his son Dean Farrell yesterday, certainly will stick with many of you, I know, and with myself since yesterday's programme. Thank you to so many of you for getting in touch. Rosanna Ruan, how are you?
Hi, John.
Thank you for talking to us as well on Liveline as well. And it's good to talk to you again, Rosanna, because people know you and they know your daughter, Saoirse. And if it's okay to say, they loved your daughter, Saoirse, too, because we were talking about the toy show earlier on. And Saoirse, of course, is the inspiration of the Late Late Toy Show appeal. You were one of those people who reacted to Derek and Dean's story yesterday on our programme as well. What did you think when you heard about the DJ Carey sentencing?
Oh, well, I think, you know, even talking to you now, it's just so triggering. And I think I've just kind of kept that hidden for a long time. I suppose when I heard about that photo circulating first, I was infuriated. And then, you know, it's come to light again with the sentencing this week. And having listened to Derek's story yesterday, myself and Ollie just found it so heartbreaking. I just think it's appalling. It's so insulting to anybody that has walked the journey of a cancer diagnosis. He has no idea, because he hasn't been through cancer himself, of how difficult, how traumatizing the effects that it leaves, and that there are so many people out there that have fought it, that are fighting it, but also it is so insulting because so many of us have lost special people to it. And I just feel infuriated by it all, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. People will remember Saoirse, of course, as I mentioned. Is it a year and a half ago, Rosanna, since you lost Saoirse?
Yeah, it will be a year ago last March. So we're heading up to the second year anniversary now next March since she passed. And, you know, in fairness, she became very well known. She's a name that's known in every household in Ireland. And I'm not controversial at all, and we're not controversial on our social media or as people at all. We're very much very positive people, and we try to get up every day and get on with it. But when you see people like this that were held in such high regard, children like Saoirse would have looked up to the likes of DJ Carey at one point years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just think, what's the lowest thing? Like that photo, I just find that photo so triggering, because our personal experience was that Saoirse needed to be fed that way. And I remember countless conversations with the consultant about what way we'd go about it, because as DJ Carey showed there with a charger for a phone, that is the nasogastric version of how people have to be fed when they're too ill or they're too weak or they're losing weight rapidly. And for Saoirse, that was a massive conversation for us.
The photo you describe, and Derek mentioned it as well, it seemed like the ultimate insult to him and to you, I know, as well, is the one that's widely circulated and shared. It's been the butt of many jokes, as well, I suppose, as well, for some over the years, too. This picture of DJ Carey with a phone charger shoved up his nose. We've learned, and there's more to come as well in on RT's primetime tonight and other programmes as well, of just how deep this deception became. But this crude sort of photograph of the phone charger up the nose was suggesting that he was getting some kind of treatment. I didn't know that the ins and outs. I met you before at your home in County Galway, mm-hmm. which I was privileged to do. And I know Saoirse was able to be at school then and play sport then.
Yeah.
At what stage did she require tube feeding and that kind of intervention?
Very early on, John, actually, after diagnosis and when she started her chemotherapy, she started to lose weight at a rapid rate. That first Christmas 2020, she actually ended up being in hospital for that Christmas because she was so, so sick. And I remember her being let out on Christmas Day for an hour. She couldn't sit in and eat the dinner with us. She was on these shakes, and I don't want to, you know, upset anyone by this detail, but she just was continuously vomiting that day because she couldn't keep her food down. And back up in Crumlin, then discussions were had that, you know, we need to get nutrients into her. And this picture is so triggering because Saoirse fought and fought to not have that nasogastric tube placed. And I, as her advocate, because I was with her in Dublin at the time, remember the conversations with her consultant saying, please, is there any other way? Because it is actually a very unpleasant thing to have for anyone that's gone through treatment. I had it myself as a child when I was ill myself. And the consultant came around and even sat down and said to her, Saoirse, what exactly is it that is really upsetting for you about the nasogastric tube? Because you have to have it. And she said it was the visual aspect of it. She didn't want her friends in school to look at her any differently. So the decision was made at that time that we would do the gastrostomy instead, which went through the tummy. So it was like a pig feed.
Yeah.
But it's just, those memories never leave. Like, Saoirse had to live through the trauma of that, that those discussions, that decision-making, and then to be pig-fed through her tummy. And it's just, you know, you see this photo and you think, my God, how low do you stoop? And I know, as you said there, that photo is circulating and it's been used a little bit as a joke in some contexts. And that is very hurtful to people like us who have walked through this journey and watched somebody be so sick and die from cancer.
Mm-hmm. I'd imagine it's very uncomfortable to have to need that for a child as well. It must be you're worried about how that looks to somebody as well, or just that it makes you stand out, I suppose, how different things are as well. That was part of what upset Saoirse.
That was it. It was going to be very obvious. I mean, obviously the hair loss came with that as well. So people would look, they'd give a second glance. She wasn't very comfortable with that. We kind of got used to it. But, you know, it was very obvious if you had a nasogastric tube that you were ill with something. And the thing about it was there was different aspects to it as well. She would have to wear that for some time, and it can be something that can fall out and it has to be readministered. So we didn't want to put her through that time and time again. So look, we made a decision that worked for us at the time, and thankfully our team backed us on that. But mm-hmm.
So there's so many levels to this, isn't there, in terms of the deceit and the hurt and the upset and the unforgivable lie here for anyone whose life has been touched by cancer and what DJ Carey did. But that photograph, that's really a difficult one for you.
Unforgivable. Like, we've seen so much cancer in our lives. My husband Ollie had cancer when we met, when we were engaged. So we walked through that journey already, and then to see your 7-year-old child be diagnosed with cancer and go through it for 4.5 years and then lose her to it. And that whole journey wasn't just about one day with a nasogastric tube. You know, there was the chemo, she had radiation, it was relapse after relapse, it was major surgeries, tumour after tumour after tumour, until the cancer just said, I'm going to win here and I'm going to take her.
Mm-hmm.
I think no matter what kind of trouble or deceit that DJ Carey was in, I think that was just the lowest thing I've ever seen done mm-hmm. in my life.
Judge Martin Nolan said that he couldn't imagine a more reprehensible fraud yesterday in DJ Carey exploiting people's good nature, and he sentenced him to 5.5 years. I asked everyone yesterday, but Rosanna, does it send out a strong message to you that this is unforgivable, that this cannot be tolerated, that you just can't do this?
Yes, absolutely it does. But I don't even know if that's enough for him, because as you said, they're like, you know, people's trust, people put their hands in their pockets. We fundraised when Saoirse was sick. Like, you see so many people fundraising now. There's an I Donate and a GoFundMe for this, that and the other. And they are all very worthy of each other. You know, they're for sick people fighting illnesses. We're trying to make life at home a little bit easier, trying to access things that they cannot get. And I remember thinking when we fundraised for Saoirse, it was COVID, thinking people are going through such a difficult time, and to think that they put their hands in their pocket, that that generosity was there in a country and further afield to want to help someone in despair. That is genuine and that is fantastic to see that support. But to do that in a fraudulent way, I don't think 5.5 years, mm-hmm. I don't think 15.5 years, it will never forgive that.
People are very stretched, of course, now with the cost of living and everything. You weigh up all these things when you're giving money to charity. As I mentioned as well, I was recalling today when I saw your message on through Instagram that when I met you, I actually think you very bravely spoke out with other families for a report I was doing about the financial pressures on families who have children or loved ones going through cancer. This is not something you take lightly. This is not something you abuse.
It's not, absolutely not. You've no idea. Like, sacrifices have to be made in a house when someone is diagnosed with cancer, whether it's the parent or the child. Someone has to be the advocate. Someone has to be the full-time carer. You know, the funds aren't there to keep people even as a carer. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you start off with your, I can't even recall what it was called at the time. You get the 104 weeks off,
yeah.
and you get paid for that. And then you have to be means tested, medical does not come into that. Childcare does not come into that. So it's not the easiest thing in the world to have to navigate.
Certainly not.
We were just lucky because Deirdre was able to access what she needed with regards to prosthetics and treatment. And but with that, my husband continued to work. So, you know, we had to make it work for us.
Rosanna, through Saoirse's brief story and through the great work that you and Ollie have done in memory of the lovely Saoirse Ruan, who we all know from the Toy Show and the Late Late Toy Show appeal, so much money has been raised for good causes too. We heard from listeners yesterday as well their concern that a fraud like this from DJ Carey damages that goodwill and the ability of charities to raise money. What do you say?
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's terrible. It just sheds a bad light on it. There are people out there and they are doing such good in their fundraising, and they really need it for people that are actually sick. So I don't know, do we need to bring in regulations or I don't know, tighter regulations, but it definitely does put a sour taste on it.
Okay. Rosanna, thank you so much for talking to us today. We mentioned the Toy Show in a lighter moment earlier on in the programme. I know we'll all think of Saoirse, I think, when it comes to Toy Show time as well, and maybe some of us always will, and of all the good work that her story has done. How are you and the family doing otherwise?
Hard time of year, John, to be honest. This 6 months from September to March, I think the clock going back has a huge effect. It's darker evenings, and then it being very child-friendly time of year, Halloween into Christmas.
Yeah.
It's very difficult, but we just keep hugging each other tight and just taking it one day at a time.
Rosanna, I wish you and Ollie and the family all the very best, and Saoirse continues to teach us that lesson as well, and to I suppose to give us that perspective to hold on tight to what we have and to treasure the good times as well. Thank you so much for talking to us, Rosanna. Very well spoken once again. You've done so much to speak out about good causes, about raising awareness about cancer and about fundraising as well for some much needed cases as well. And thank you for your input on DJ Carey today. Just one of hundreds, if not thousands, who have got in touch with us since yesterday. Thank you all for doing so. Rosanna Ruan, mother of the late Saoirse Ruan there. Do take care. It's Liveline at RTE.ie.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815. Get in touch with Liveline on 0818 715 815.
And of course, it's Liveline at RTE.ie for your emails as well. Thank you to Saoirse Ruan's mum, Rosanna, there for talking to us once again. And as I said, to so many of you for getting in touch about DJ Carey and other things today as well, Liveline at RTE.ie. One listener telling me that if when I was talking about geriatric pregnancies and older mothers, how the world has changed, they said, I had my first baby at the age of 29 in 1975. It was written on my chart, I'm an elderly prima gravida, meaning elderly first delivery. My husband thought it was hilarious. Elderly first delivery at the age of 29. Well, I'm beginning to agree with him, she says. That's Deirdre in Cork as well. Thanks to so many of you for getting in touch as well. It doesn't matter what age, I think, so long as you're happy and healthy. Today's Liveline was produced by Rachel Graham. Paul Murnock was on sound and Laura Lee Davies is our broadcast coordinator. Brendan Courtney's coming up next. From me, John Cook, and all the Liveline team, have a great afternoon.